from the crypt.
Boys and ghouls, welcome to episode 140 of Dads from the Crypt. My name is Jason. I am your host tonight, and I'm joined by Jody.
Hello.
And Mondo.
Hello.
Hello. And tonight we have a great guest. He is Ken Sledge from the Sledgehammer Horror YouTube channel and podcast. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Very, very excited to be here.
Excited to have you on. Go ahead. Tell us about your show. Tell us about your channel.
My wife and I run Sledgehammer Horror. We have a couple different segments. My first horror movie is kind of my baby. I bring guests on, talk to them about the first horror movie they watched, what it meant to them. Ashley writes a couple segments. One's called Didn't See That Coming, where we do a deep dive on a movie with a twist ending and how it affected us, versus where we talk about an original versus a remake, give the merits to both, and decide which one we like more. And then the newest one is called In Defense Of, where we bring a guest on and we defend a movie that is not very liked in the horror community. And then once a week, we do a live episode, top 10 franchise ranking, watch along, something along those lines, is an interactive way to stay up to date with everybody.
I feel like Mondo and I both like perked up with the In Defense Of stuff, because we like a lot of movies that other people hate. Like, I was like, oh, that's my stuff right there.
Jason, it's so funny because episode we did, Ashley was not a part of it because one of my really good friends, his name is Josh. He's the drummer for the band Coheed and Cambria. And we did an episode on Jason Goes to Hell. And Ashley, because that's my favorite movie in that franchise, and it's his as well. And Ashley was like, yeah, I'm not going to be a part of this because I have nothing positive at all to say about this movie. It's fun. Even if you don't like a movie, like we've done Jason Takes Manhattan, we've done Halloween Resurrection, The Wrong Turn Reboot, The Human Centipede. Like, we've done all these movies. And even if, like, you find a movie that me personally I don't like, to hear people that love that movie talk so emphatically about it, like, it makes you want to go and rewatch it and give it another chance. So it's probably my favorite thing to do right now. Ashley's too. That was kind of another one of her ideas. Sorry she can't be here tonight, guys. She's at work. But she's sending her love. She wishes she could be here. That's another one that's just, it's so fun to hear people get so excited about movies that other people may not love. It's really good time.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I'm a supporter of Jason Goes to Hell. Oh, sorry. I'm a very big supporter of Jason Goes to Hell. That's a good movie. I'll stand by that.
Dude, it's a Friday Nightmare and Evil Dead movie all rolled into one.
I can't remember who
that is. Great. So good.
I just watched a newer movie, and the guy that plays Creighton Duke was in it, or a newer TV show. I couldn't pick him out, but what's funny is I look at his acting credit, and he's done all these like prestigious roles, and I remember him as Creighton Duke from Jason Goes to Hell.
Same. That I will never see him as any other role except for Creighton Duke. One of the best characters in the whole Friday the 13th mythos, in my opinion.
I'm with you. 100%.
He needs a spinoff. Do they do a comic spinoff? That would be great.
They should do like a Netflix series, like a 10 episode series of like Creighton Duke, like the bounty hunter himself hunting down these different like horror villains that we know. Like, that would be dope as shit.
That would be.
Now, I saw you had a Versus episode recently with The Fog, and I'm curious what positive things you had to say about The Fog remake.
It had some good moments of acting. And there was one fire stunt that was really dope. Like, there was one fire stunt that was practically done that looked dope.
A good fire stunt goes a long way for me.
If
I see somebody on fire and it's like 45 seconds, I'm like, holy crap, how are they pulling this thing off?
Right. So when they did the practical stuff in the Fog remake, that was pretty cool. But again, I'm not a Fog purist. I didn't see the Fog, even the original, until like probably 10 years ago. it just, that wasn't my type of horror film growing up. I was more of a slasher guy growing up, so I didn't really get into the other, especially, I hate to say it like this, and sound like such a douchebag, but I was never really a big John Carpenter fan, man. I've grown to really appreciate him the older I've gotten. I still, to this day, think The Thing is probably the best horror movie of all time. But as a kid, it just didn't do anything for me as a kid.
Oh, did you watch Big Trouble Little China as a kid? Because that was my John Carpenter movie.
No. I don't think I've ever seen it still to this day, honestly.
Oh, okay.
I'll have to check it out.
I highly recommend that one. That's a good one.
Yeah.
That one's just fun. They Live, too. They Live is one of my favorites.
I do love They Live. I love that.
Yeah.
Growing up a huge WWF fan, you know, seeing Roddy Piper in a horror movie, I was like, I got to watch this.
And the best fight scene in history.
You met some big people at Astronomicon, it looked like, from WWF, or at least wrestling.
Yeah. We got to talk with, we got to interview Kurt Angle, Matt Hardy, Matt Riddle, who is the fucking man. I love Matt Riddle. He's such a good dude. I want to kind of watch his car for a second because he's a big amateur wrestler, UFC guy. Mm-hmm. And my son, who's a sophomore, is a 2-time state wrestling champion. Huge amateur wrestling guy. And he was a big fan of Matt Riddle. And because Matt Riddle beat John Jones in high school wrestling twice. And so my son's always been a huge Matt Riddle fan. And Matt Riddle called my son and talked to him a little bit, you know, about a Stallion workout and stuff like that. And he's just like the coolest dude. Like when I started talking to him about my son, he would, like, his eyes lit up. Because me and Matt, we've been communicating for a while through Instagram because he's going to do my first horror movie episode as well. Matt Riddle's a huge horror fan. And when I was talking about my son, he was like, call him up, bro. And like, we called him and he was like, hey, bro, it's Matt Riddle. And my son just freaked out. He was like, no way. So, yeah, I got to wash his car a little bit because like that was that to me is bigger than anything else. You know, recognized that, you know, my son was a wrestling fan. My son was a fan of his and he wanted to communicate with him right away. So
that's awesome.
That was really cool of him.
You hear so many negative stories about wrestlers. That's a heartwarming one. Also, my Mick Foley story just takes 2 seconds. But I saw his spoken word event that he did down here in Las Vegas, and I was wearing my Wanted Dead Cactus Jack shirt from Japan, actually. And after the show, I got my books autographed by him, and I was talking to him. And I said, "Yeah, my buddy's kids has gotten to wrestling, and they're huge Mankind fans, but it's 21 and over." And he goes, "Well, how quick can they get down here?" So I called up my friend. He goes, "Hey, they can be here in 20 minutes." Mick goes, "I'll hang around." And he hung around 20 minutes past the time he was supposed to leave and met both of them and spent 15 minutes chatting with them before he finally was like, "I got a flight to catch in the morning. I'm so sorry." And I thought that was like just, you know, they say never meet your heroes, but that was a example of why you should.
Right. See, and that's amazing. Like, it's funny because Mick was there and Mick is technically still under contract with the WWE. So he's not allowed to do YouTube interviews.
Interesting.
And I was stupid enough to tell him it was for YouTube, which I shouldn't have, but it was funny because it was a 3-day event, and day one he was Mankind, day two he was Dude Love, and day three he was Cactus Jack. So I thought that was pretty funny that he did all three personas. So it was like, you can meet Mankind one day only, you can meet Dude Love one day only. Like, it was pretty funny the way they pulled that off. So
that's
super cool. He was a great guy. You know, we talked to him for a little bit. Really kind, sweet guy, just wanted to talk everybody's ear off, and that's what you love to see with those guys, you know?
Yeah. I'm with you.
All right. Well, let's roll into our review. We did say we were going to do another Creep Show, but surprise, a very good movie came out this week that we just could not pass up talking about. So we're going to review Abigail.
It's also very rare that all three of us see a movie on the same week. Right? That just happened to come out.
Definitely. So we had to take advantage of that. All right, Jody, give us your plot synopsis.
All right, so I had to pull up Wikipedia for this one just because it was just a Thursday night when I saw this. We weren't planning on doing this at the time, and I watched for enjoyment. There was no, like, thinking, you know, keeping up with the plot or anything like that other than, you know, the natural kind.
You saw Civil War the same night, right?
I did, yeah. No, I doubled your head. Yeah, I did Civil War and Abigail both the same night. So, and that was a good night, too, by the way. Civil War's also great. We're not going to cover that right now, but great movie.
Well, we saw them back to back. Yeah, both great. We saw one on Thursday, one on Friday, and both fantastic, but two completely different tones.
Yes. All right. So I have my Wikipedia here, and I'll do my best to not sound like I'm reading off Wikipedia. All right. So we're introduced to six criminals who are there to kidnap a little girl named Abigail. All we know is that she's the daughter of some powerful, rich person in New York. And so our crew that we have, they're told not to discuss names or any personal information. So at least at the beginning, we don't know who any of them are. There's a guy named Lambert, who's the guy setting this all up. He's the guy who's going to get the money and split it, because they're supposed to get $7 million each at the end of all this. Rather than go by names, they have aliases that are all Rat Pack names. And so we have, and this is a mix of like stuff we find out later. Let's go ahead and put our spoiler warning from the beginning here. Spoilers all the way through. So we have a former army medic and recovering drug addict who goes by Joey, played by Melissa Barrera. Is that how you say your last name? Yeah. We have a former NYPD detective named Frank, a wealthy hacker comes from money named Sammy. And that is Catherine Newton. I forgot. Frank is,
Dan Stevens,
which, but according to the trailers I'm watching, we're in the middle of a Dan Stevens moment. And you know what? Yes, let's have that happen. I've been waiting for that since The Guest.
He's about to be in Cuckoo, isn't he?
Yeah, Cuckoo. He was in the Godzilla X Kong movie that just came out. Yeah, Dan Stevens having a time here. I like it.
Yeah.
We have the driver, whose name is Dean, who sounds like he's on... What do they call it when they mix the cough syrup? He's got that mumbly, like, cough syrup, you know, drug guy.
Dean had a punchable personality.
He sure did. We got a guy named Rickles, who is a Marine sniper, and a big, like, the muscle is a guy named Peter. After 24 hours, all they have to do is stay the night there, so that they can deliver the ransom note and all that stuff. They just have to stay with Abigail, stay overnight, $7 million. Joey is the one who is sent to watch over her. And as they bond, they kind of talk together, Joey and Abigail. And she reveals that she has a son. And at this point, Abigail says something, it's in the trailer, some line along the lines of, like, I'm sorry for what's going to happen to you all. And at that point, everyone gets a little nervous about who her dad is, because as far as we know, we're dealing with gangsters. We're dealing with, you know, powerful underworld figures. But they basically say, don't worry about it. Don't ask questions. We'll be fine. Just watch her for the night. Dean attempts to flirt with Sammy. Does not work. And then he goes into the basement and is the first victim of whatever is going on. He gets dragged away. Sammy hears his screams and goes to investigate and finds his headless corpse, which is one of those movies that did it in the right order. They introduced a character so, like, grating and obnoxious that by the time he lost his head, you're like, all right, this is good. This is good. This is what I wanted. Mm-hmm. So once they find the corpse, Frank runs up and confronts Abigail. She sees his face, demands to know who her father is. And we find out that her father is Christoph Lazar, a feared crime lord that's known for people dying in brutal ways when they cross him. Almost animalistic attacks happening to them. So once they find out it's Lazar, Rickles tries to leave, but the home security system activates. It's one of those, like, lockdown security systems with the big panels that cover all the windows. The doors are locked down. While they are trying to find a way out, Rickles is killed by something. And they start to realize that Abigail might be the problem. So they go into the room with Abigail, and there's this altercation. And during the altercation, Abigail stands up in her bed and reveals her vampire teeth. She is a full-out monster. Real quick, before we get it, and we're going to talk about this in a minute. I wish I could have been completely surprised by this. I feel so bad for the marketing people on this movie, because they somehow had to market a movie that had a huge twist, but the twist is also the only reason why people are going to come see this movie.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't say vampire ballerina, I'm not coming to see this movie, other than the fact that I'm a horror guy who's going to see everything. But yeah, man, I wish I had been able to go in blind on this. There's just no way.
Yeah, it's like you want to have your audience this
without the vampire ballerina thing. It's going to just seem like a suspense kidnapping.
Right. Yeah, right. It's like they're taking audience, and then so they're going to be pissed off. They actually went to see a vampire movie. They won't get any of that.
And the horror people aren't going to go because it's not the kind of movie we're there to see.
I mean, they downplayed it slightly so they know that there's something off about her, but without giving away. But I guess they decided.
I think even knowing there's something wrong with her, though, I think gives away too much. If you really want the full experience,
they have to give them some. I would think they'd have to tell something. Yeah. They didn't have to go full on showing all of it. But on the other hand, if you're going to do it, then maybe just go all out.
That is, I heard a lot of complaints about the marketing for this movie that the like trailer revealed too much. But it's gonna have to reveal something. Like there's just no way to get around it.
Dude, I'm the first.
I think their idea was it didn't matter if they gave it away because the performances were great.
Right. Yeah. And that's really what it is. Yeah. I would have loved to have seen it without any of that, but it was still great, even knowing that.
I'm the first person that'll shit on a trailer that's just gives away too much. And that one gave away pieces, but there's still so many twists and turns that you were not expecting. Like, there's nothing in the trailer aside from that one scene that I was expecting to pop up.
Yeah. So she pops up as a vampire. They try to fight back and they shoot her a whole bunch, but she just gets up from it. And so they try to figure out what to do. They want to use garlic, stakes, crosses. None of those do anything to her, though. There's a great scene where they send Sammy, Catherine Newton, in to get some garlic, and she comes out and she's like, I found it, and holds up a big bag of red onions. what was the line when
Sammy, those are fucking onions.
That's right.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I know that line because my 4-year-old has been repeating it for the last day and a half. So, she thought it was just the funniest damn thing in the world. And I do want to interject real quick because I really think that Angus Young's death was a lot gnarlier.
Yeah,
I think we probably got the head getting ripped off scene, and unfortunately, that young man lost his life after the filming of the movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think to pay the respect to him and his family, I think they really toned down his death for the film.
Probably so, yeah.
It just the way that it played out, I was like, and if they did, kudos to Radio Silence. You know, that was really, really cool. You know, because like I said, real life shit matters, and that young man. Absolutely. Made a mistake. He lost his life. We don't want to see him get viciously decapitated in a film afterwards. I'm sure his family wouldn't like that either. So good for them. They still, you know, played it off really well, but I feel like that was a lot gnarlier on the first shoot.
I think you're probably right too, especially if it's the first time we see blood in this movie. I bet it would have been big.
Yeah. I mean, but good for them. I think they did the right thing. You know, like that's really respectful. It's really cool, and that's what it's all about. So good for them if that's the way it went.
All death is tragic, but he's only 25, 26.
Like, yeah,
right.
Super young. Like, yeah.
All right. So none of the traditional vampire hunting things work, and so they have a tranquilizer that Joey had used to knock her out in the first place, and so they manage to knock her out and lock her in an elevator, but in the process, she bites Sammy on the arm. When Abigail wakes up in that elevator, she reveals she knows who their real identities are, and she goes through each of them. Lambert set them up, and they are there for Abigail to kill. All of them had crossed Lazar at some point, and this is her way of playing. Anybody who crosses her dad, she gets to play by bringing them all together and then murdering them one by one. They leave Frank in charge of watching her, and Abigail just blasts the door off that elevator and knocks it down. She could have gotten out at any point. And they manage to rip some wooden planks off a window, and light hits Abigail's hand, and it just like explodes and falls off. Great. So we find out sunlight is her weakness. That one vampire piece of lore does remain true. But there are only a couple hours left till nightfall. And so once nightfall happens, there's nothing holding her back. And so the group splits up. And at this point, Sammy is with the big guy, the muscle guy. And Sammy begins to turn. And it's not just she becomes a vampire. She becomes a puppet that Abigail is fully in control of. Awesome scene. Catherine Newton is so good, and her vampire makeup is so cool, and she manages to kill the big guy and then chase after Joey and Frank, and Joey takes a silver tray and reflects light back at her, and Sammy blows up. When vampires die in this movie, it is the messiest, squishiest, like, splat explosion.
Yeah.
Fantastic. It's Radio Silence loves their big wet explosions. Another spoiler for other Radio Silence without going into details. But it reminded me a lot of the end of Ready or Not, as right. People just start plop, 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 popping. It's the same thing. Okay, so they try to get to the mansion's control room to deactivate security. And there they run into Lambert, who we haven't mentioned, is played by Giancarlo Esposito. And he becomes a vampire, or he reveals that he is a vampire, which Giancarlo Esposito is a vampire. Like, how could you not love this movie? And so he turns Frank into a vampire so that they can kill Abigail together. And as soon as Frank gets turned, now we have Dan Stevens vampire, he kills, what's his name? Lambert kills him. And then goes after Joey. And so he attacks Abigail, drinks her blood, gets stronger, and there's big fight between the two of them. He wants to turn Joey into a puppet so that he control her. He can control her, and he bites her. And he tries, but it doesn't work. And that's when Abigail's like, you have to be, you know, you have to practice this shit if you're going to be able to do all the cool stuff. Like, you can't just become a vampire and instantly do mind control. That takes time. So she rescues Joey, the two team up, and Frank gets staked. He explodes, and Joey's freed from the vampire curse. She gets ready to leave, and that's when Abigail's dad shows up. And Lazar is just one of the many names he's gone by over the years. I think it's pretty implied that he may be Dracula. This is part of the Universal Monsters thing, and this is the perfect way to sneak Dracula into it, I think, personally. Yeah. Abigail manages to stand up to her father because he wants to kill Joey. He says, no, don't. And Joey's life is saved. And she leaves to go try to reunite with her son, who she's been neglecting. So lots happens in one little night, but man, fun night. Fun night for us, bad night for them.
Yeah.
They have a terrible night.
All right. Thank you, Jody. All right, Ken, you're our guest, so you can go first. What did you think of this movie?
Loved it. Two of my three favorite movies this year are rooted in Universal Monster lore with Lisa Frankenstein and Abigail. And I think Kevin Durant stole the show in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think that his character, who he played the big muscle guy,
mm-hmm.
he's fantastic throughout the whole movie. I mean, I expected a lot out of Dan Stevens, out of Melissa Barrera, out of Catherine Newton, obviously, but I've never been a huge fan of anything Kevin Durant's really done. So to see him in a role like this,
mm-hmm.
I thought he was great. And Alicia Weir, who played Abigail, was so good. Convincing.
Mm-hmm.
Part of our review, we said it's amazing that, you know, the last couple of years you have Amy Donald, who played Megan, the McGraw sisters from Megan, the Black Phone, Alicia Weir in this movie, the young ladies taking over horror and being so good at what they're doing. It's amazing to see, you know.
Yeah.
And she did a great job, and she got to let loose when they gave her the second tranquilizer, you know. Like, I thought that was really, really cool. Yeah, a big fan. This is my highest rated of the movie of the year so far. I gave it a 4.5 out of 5, and I usually don't. The only other movie mm-hmm. that came close, I gave Late Night with the Devil a 4 out of 5. But I didn't expect to like this movie as much as I did. And I was pleasantly surprised by the end of the film with how much I laughed, how much I loved. I love when you have a movie that's this big of a scope, so the CGI is there, but it doesn't look ridiculous and stupid because of the scope of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
The movie is so big that when you get those big CGI moments, it doesn't look like a dud. It doesn't look bad. And I like Renfield. I felt the same way about that. The CGI yeah. that looked great because mm-hmm. of what the movie was trying to do. And when a movie like this can do that, hell yeah, I'm in. So I loved it. I've seen it twice. I'm very excited to watch it again. There's so many moments that, and there's little things. Like if you go back and you rewatch, there's a moment where Catherine Newton falls into a swimming pool full of dead bodies.
Yeah.
And one of the dead bodies in there is Nosferatu. If you look at it, the body that's floating right to the left of her is a total Nosferatu. Like it's a total Easter egg.
I feel like that's one of those scenes that like, once we have this on Blu-ray, we can pause it. Like, there's going to be a lot of little faces in there that we're going to recognize.
Oh, I totally did the Leonardo. I was doing that. I was like, that was Nosferatu. We went in the second time. I was like, I was looking for it. And I was like, that's totally a Nosferatu Easter egg. And then, like, 2 minutes later, they give the Nosferatu line. And Radio Silence is known for little Easter eggs and stuff like that. So I was just, like I said, very pleasantly surprised, because Radio Silence to me is either extremely hit or extremely missed. There's never been anything they've done where I've been like, that's all right. Either I love what they do or I hate what they do. And this one just, it blew me away with how well it was done.
Nice. All right, Mondo.
Yeah, I was a big fan of this. This is a real fun horror movie. It's not a heavy film. It's a kind of movie I think you can watch any day of the week and have a good time with, which I really love. Yeah, much like Ken, probably my third favorite of the year, because I'm just in love with Late Night with the Devil, as in that's like an immaculate. This one might be like a coin flip with immaculate.
It's gonna be hard, yeah,
because they're such different movies. But yeah, all the performances are fantastic. When I say Angus Cloud's character had a punchable personality, that's because he played him so well. Like
it's a good thing.
Ultimate douchebag. And the other piece of this is the humor in this was fantastic.
Yes.
None of it felt forced. It felt like it was a piece of these people's personalities. When Kevin Durant's character gets shot and he goes off, he's kind of off camera and he goes, well, that really hurt. And I thought that feels like that was pretty fantastic. And then the way Abigail toys with her victims is kind of chilling, actually. When the blonde girls, I forget names all the time, terrible names. But when she says, "Am I going to turn into a vampire?" She goes, "Maybe, maybe not." I'm like, "What a fucking terrifying answer! That's somehow more terrifying than just telling the truth."
Right.
And then the scene in that cage too, when she gives him the out and Frank the out and goes, "If you let me out, you can live." And then he reneges on the deal, and she just busts down the door. I was like, "Oh." She's just having a good time. She's living her best life.
Yeah.
And the other cool things they do in this, too, is also when you walk into that first room, or when they find that hidden room and it has the statue of the mother and the daughter and the daughter. Mm-hmm. They never tell you it's Abigail, but the way the camera goes, they kind of focus on it so in the background so you can see that it's Abigail. And I thought that was really, really well done, too. So I loved this movie, and I cannot wait to watch it again.
Yeah. Right. And Kevin Durant, the way that he delivers his lines,
yes,
like the part where Joey thinks that Frank is the bad guy. And she comes in with the gun and she's like, "We're going to take you out." And he's like, "What's going on here?" And Kevin Durant repeats what she says, like verbatim. And Frank's like, "Oh, thanks, you fucking genius. I couldn't figure that out on my own." Like, just the way that he delivers these lines is so, so good. Like,
he does brilliant. He looks like juiced up Elon Musk.
I was literally mean to say that he looks like Musk on steroids.
I am not insinuating he's on the juice. He just looks like if Elon Musk started taking steroids, that Elon Musk might look at. Somehow less terrifying, though, because I'm way more afraid of AI than I am afraid of a musclehead mob enforcer or whatever.
Actually.
Yeah, no, I 100% love this movie. This was one from the first trailer I knew I was in, like Vampire Ballerina. The makeup, we haven't talked about it much, but the makeup in this movie is so good. I love the look of the vampires. Like, you know, the clean vampires with like regular, like a couple little pointy teeth don't do much for me. But this new kind of vampire that is in movies like this, movies like... Renfield, like you mentioned earlier, 30 days a night, like like shark teeth, just rows of jagged, nasty teeth. Abigail looked so cool. And just about every scene that she was a monster, Catherine Newton turning into a monster, Giancarlo Esposito, Dan Stevens, all of their monster makeup every single time. So cool. And then great big blood effects. Like I said, they pop like balloons full of blood when you kill a vampire in this movie. And it's so well done, Some of it's practical, I'm sure. Some of it's CGI, but it works. It's pretty seamless. Like you said, the little girl playing Abigail is an incredible actress.
Yes.
Well beyond her years as far as being able to. She was convincing as a couple hundred year old vampire, even though she literally is a little girl in real life. Like, yeah, she did a great job with that role.
I was reading, I think when they started filming, she was 14 or 15.
Yeah, that's nuts. Like, she's so good for that age. And I like the cast. It's a fun cast. Dan Stevens, I'm always happy to see him. Catherine Newton is another one of those. Always happy to see her and stuff. Melissa Barrera, Radio Silence obviously loves her. I think she's pretty good. Like, I don't think she's great, but I think she's fine. The guys from Radio Silence love her. So, whatever.
I think it's the best role I've seen her in, though.
I think so, too. I think I probably like this better than her Scream.
Yeah, I think this is her. She's showcasing. You're seeing her develop as an actress on the screen.
Kind of cool. Yeah. Well, and yeah,
she was kind of the heart of the movie. She's brought a lot of heart, and I really like that. She did a great job with that.
My complaints about her in Scream is just that sometimes she's a little flat. I think she's less flat as she gets more experience, and so that I'm fine with it.
And I think I didn't mention, but that phone call with her son was kind of heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because she's making that
good moment,
and it's the last time he's ever going to hear her voice, and the way her voicemail is all just her like pumping him up, like,
yeah,
I'm proud of you. You're the best thing I've ever. You're the best mistake I ever. Not mistake. You didn't call her that. It's like,
yeah,
the best thing I ever did.
Yeah, but yeah. You know, like as a parent, you're thinking like, put yourself in those shoes. Like, if you're
last gonna have moment,
the last moment. That's kind of heartbreaking.
It's also why you can kind of get with the storyline that she's not going to back down from this money no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
She sees it as her reason to. Now I can get my son back. I can start my life over again. And I can. And she's doing it all for her son at the end of the day. And that's always going to be noble, in my opinion.
But yeah, no, great performances from pretty much everybody. And, great special effects, a fun premise. I love Vampire Ballerina. That's cool. The dance scenes, the scenes where she was a vampire and dancing and covered in blood. It's just a cool scene. Like, I just want to watch those scenes over again.
Yeah.
Yeah, she did most of that dancing herself.
Yeah.
They probably have stunt doubles a bit here and there. But especially, like, I read that the part where she's dancing on the banister, that was actually her, like in the wire rig.
Oh, cool.
That's cool.
See, that's cool as shit, man. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I definitely picked up some
ballerina. I know she does a lot of ballet and stuff. So,
yeah,
to have her become a part of this. It's so dope, dude. Like I said, when you see young kids that are doing this, and especially with today's age, where you know that hopefully by now we're, these kids are being treated right, and parents are allowed to be on set all the time, and it's really cool to see the resurgence of horror with young ladies. I think that's what brings my daughter into it. Like I said, we watched Megan. She met Amy Donald. I haven't shown her Terrifier 2 yet, but I showed her the scene of the pale girl, and then she met Amelie McLean, and like she was such, she was so kind to my daughter, and that brings in these young ladies into horror. And I think that's so great. They get other young girls that they can look up to as a villain or as a hero with Madeline McGraw and Violet McGraw, the Black Phone, and Megan. When you have these young female characters that are strong leads or strong villains, you have somebody that little girls can look up to. And I think that's fantastic for horror.
People will say that representation doesn't matter, but it really does.
It absolutely
matters. I have a friend of mine who's Mexican. He watched Satanic Hispanics. He's not a horror movie fan at all, but because of the way they touch on the culture and everything that he grew up with, now he wants to get into more horror films because he loved that movie so much. So representation is a big deal, and it really does matter.
Especially for younger people. If my daughter looks on a screen, and like if I show my daughter, Saw, or I show my daughter Megan, it's going to be, she's going to gravitate towards Megan because she has somebody on there that she can relate to. And it's so amazing to see that, like you said, that type of representation with young ladies getting the lead roles in these movies. Run it.
And they're killing it.
There's nothing scarier than a little girl, man. Like, that's purity exemplified.
Yeah.
So when you have these little girls that are villains and monsters, like, it's so awesome.
Yeah.
I love
it. And they're killing it too. Like, they're not just getting cast. They're doing fantastic.
You
look
at Amelie in Terrifier 2 as the little pale girl, like, she's
the best part for me.
Icon status of Art the Clown just from that one role. And every time we talk to her, she talks about how the people want what's your backstory? What's going to happen to you in Terrifier 3? And she's like, I don't even know if I'm in it yet. So, you know, that type of thing.
I think too, also when you can demystify horror a little bit, like mm-hmm. you know, let's say demystify for little kids, like when little kids can see someone who looks like them, but obviously I mean, your daughter's met the actresses. She knows that they're actresses right. and they're acting. I think that takes away some of that terrifying element from it in a good way for kids to where they can understand that, hey, I'm going to be scared, but it's once the movie's over, the fright is over.
See, right. and I'm blessed and I'm lucky because the films I've been in, I've got to take my daughters to set with me. So that's like cool. in Bride of the Killer Pinata, when I got my face ripped off, my daughters got to see it, you know, and know that, you know, dad's okay. It's all play. It's all pretend. And so that's why I think I've always said, and again, I'm no therapist. There's nothing I'm about to say that's rooted in fact. This is just my opinion. If you introduce children to horror at a young age and they want to watch it, and you educate them the differences between fantasy and reality, it grounds them more in reality because they know this is real. This is not real. This is, you know, like just my opinion. I feel like as long as you have the education to go along with it and you're not forcing it on your kids, then they're going to be more grounded in reality because they understand the difference between fact and fiction.
I remember doing that with my kids. Go ahead.
You know, I'm with you. I said it before on this podcast that, like my daughter, when she was real young, wanted to watch Nightmare on Elm Street because I had Nightmare on Elm Street posters and merchandise everywhere. So and she was like 5 or 6. So I said, you can watch it, but let's watch the special features first. And I showed her like them putting on his makeup and Robert Englund just as a normal guy giving an interview. So then when she watched it, she knew that's a guy with makeup on in a mask. And this is going to be a movie. This is not real. And I think that helped out a lot. But I told her,
I was going to say the same thing. When I watched Friday the 13th with my daughter when she was young, we looked up Tom Savini like special effects and showed how he did every single kill in there so that, you know, She could see how it all came together and how it was all just pretend and the tricks they used to make it look realer.
I still have my face.
Oh, cool.
That's amazing. From Bride of the Killer Pinata, you know? So, like, she'll grab it and she'll go, Daddy's face, you know, and she'll do that stuff with it. So,
Jason, just saying,
again, education. It's everything. Everything in the world. As long as you have education to go along with it, you know, yeah. I feel like that's the best way to go. Don't hide kids from it. Educate them about it.
Yeah, it's one of the things that's kind of like you mentioned. I'm a huge pro wrestling fan, and we mentioned pro wrestling earlier. And you know, everyone knows it's fake. Everyone or it's predetermined. Everyone knows that. But the fun part about it is being able to suspend your disbelief for 30 minutes, 45 minutes. And for anybody who is watching tonight, is AEW Dynasty. And right before I got in this podcast, I was late because I had to finish watching Will Ospreay versus Bryan Danielson, which might now be my favorite professional wrestling match of all time. So I'm super hyped right now. I have 2 more matches to finish after this podcast is over. But like one of the beauties of horror too is also that suspension of disbelief. Like, yeah, you know, they're actors, you know, this is fake, but I'm going to be scared for an hour and a half, or I'm going to have a right. good time and watch splatter. And that's kind of what I love about the genre.
Bring it back to the movie a little bit. So I saw a test screening of this a couple months ago. So I've been like, sitting on my hands trying to tell people that, no, this is more than the trailer shows, because this is the concept, I think, in like alternate universe, or that if they just handed to a lesser director who got a lesser cast, you can make the same movie. It just wouldn't be as special. Mm-hmm. But the cast here is so good. The directing is so good. The effects, everything works so well that like it elevates what could have been a ho-hum movie into something really special. Kevin Durant as Peter, the buff guy, is freaking hilarious.
Amazing.
When I saw, so again, when you go to a screening, they usually take your cell phone, so you can't do any recordings or anything. So the first thing, I didn't know who he was. So the first thing I did when I got my cell phone back was trying to figure out who this actor was. They don't show you credits, so you don't get a name or anything. So I had to do like some sleuthing to figure it out. But that's how like impressed I was.
I went to a pre-screening of Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those ones I didn't even tell you a movie it was. You went in blind. And you could still see the green screen where they're like, right. where green guys are pushing bars, maybe we'll spin in circles. And it was super cool. But my buddy of mine came with me, and they said no cell phones. And he goes, they'll let me have my phone watch. And of course, they said no. So what he does is he walks over, he takes a picture of himself. And this is back in like 2010, 11, 12 maybe. And he sets it at his home screen and then goes and walks Lost and Found, which is 5 feet away, and goes, I found this, and hands it to him. And then when we leave, He walks out and goes, "Hey, you have my cell phone." He goes, "What does it look like?" He goes, "It's a phone with a picture of me on it." And I was like, "That's brilliant."
I don't care when I go to those. It's actually nice putting your phone.
I don't care. I don't care either. I mean, everyone should have their cell phone off anyways when they're watching.
No, I mean, they like, even if you did that, they won't let you in without doing a metal detector on you. At least nowadays. Oh, wow. So they're really strict about that.
Yeah, that's how it was when I went to too. Same thing.
So yeah, it's been so hard to like, everyone's like, "Oh, they showed too much of the trailer." But what I want to keep trying to tell people is like, no, there's so much more, not plot wise, but just as far as like the characters are so good. It's mm-hmm. so funny. So it's like knowing this and not able to tell people, it's so nice to be able to hear everyone have the same kind of impression.
I'll be honest. The trailer to me was I'll wait for this to come out on VOD. I'm not going to lie. That's just kind of my, but then when you were talking about it, and again, you didn't tell us anything about it, but you mm-hmm. said, "No, this movie's, you're going to have a lot of fun with this movie." I tend to trust you, Jason. I usually rate everything higher than you do. So I figured if you liked it, I would love it.
No, I told you that this is going to be my number one movie of the year, like months ago, at least like so far. And nothing since then has dethroned it. There's something like, "Oh, good. I really liked Immaculate. I watched that the other night."
But to put it into, but also my wife, who didn't know about Abigail, I showed her the trailer on Wednesday mm-hmm. and said, "Do you want to go see us on Friday?" And she goes, "Yes, hell yes, I want to go see this movie on Friday."
I feel like this is an easy movie to convince people to go see once you get that concept out there. And even if, you know, you were talking about like spoilers or whatever, like, I mean, you know what's going to happen. Like, it's a vampire girl. She's going to kill everybody except for the main character, right? Like, we know that from the get-go. It's just, it's how you get there. It's the performance.
The one thing that you thought that might survive, they kill off like right away.
So yeah.
The one thing that was different in the actual movie was the Matthew Good part, the father at the end. That wasn't in the test screening. So I'm assuming they just wanted to keep that cameo. Like, you have to sign all the NDAs, but sometimes things slip out. So I think they wanted to keep that as a surprise.
That's cool.
And I'm glad they had that, because it was a little flat. Might be the best way to say it, for just kind of walking away afterwards. I was hoping for like to be one more thing. And I'm glad they actually was another thing.
Yeah.
And I love Dan Stevens in this being just a total asshole. Like, cause we're used to him being like Downton Abbey, playing Sir Lancelot in the Night at the Museum movies. So I'm used to seeing him like the Beast and being the Beast. He's been playing a good guy. Or even like in The Guest, he's just kind of, he doesn't go over the top.
He's mysterious in The Guest, but.
What's that?
He's more mysterious in The Guest than like bad or good, you know?
Yeah, but seeing just playing an out-and-out jerk in this was really fun. Yeah. I really liked that.
He starts out as just being a jerk, and I think it really turns for him when he busts in the room and then puts a gun to Abigail's head, because mm-hmm. he doesn't know she's a vampire. He's doing it just because he's mad and threatening to kill this 12-year-old girl, the fact that he's upset and doesn't believe her. And that's fucking like, at that point, I just know you're an evil son of a bitch.
Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's good. I like that.
He's great. In the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's great.
It's good to have someone to really like hiss at, like when he's on screen. Like,
you know, so, I mean, they made it very, very clear that this is going to be your antagonist. Mm-hmm. And even afterwards,
when they have her in the cage and he's like, "Look, we're sorry. We didn't know who your dad was. We didn't know what you were." And she's like, "So you were going to beat and torture me when you thought I was a normal 12-year-old girl?" And he's like, I said, "We're sorry." Like, that was insane. Like, the way that, like, I loved it. I thought it was so, like, there was not a moment in this. There were some things I didn't like. I'm going to actually disagree with you, Jody. I didn't like Catherine Newton with the teeth. I didn't.
Oh, really?
It. Yeah, I don't know. Like, that's the biggest nitpick I have in a movie.
There was something about her scene with the teeth and the dancing that brought up Night of the Demons for me, which is one of my favorites. And so once I had that Night of the Demons connection in my brain, like, I was on board.
Like, I thought everything else about her looked great, but the teeth, I don't know. They just, they didn't look right to me. Everybody else I thought looked great with the teeth. But like I said, little nitpicks like that. The third act could have been 10 minutes shorter, you know, like little stupid things, but if those are the worst things you're doing in a movie, holy shit, you're doing a great job.
Did you guys think the end fight scene went on like a tad longer than it might have should have? Like, maybe a little redundance?
Yeah.
Which is, again, nitpick, fine.
Right. Yeah, I feel like you could have shaved 10 minutes off this movie and it would have been just fine. I think the biggest problem we're running into with horror movies nowadays is they're trying too hard to go too long.
Yeah.
Terrifier 2 did the same thing. You guys were talking about Immaculate earlier. I felt the same way about that. That movie could have been 10 to 15 minutes shorter. Probably the best ending of the year, though. The biggest holy shit moment I've seen this year was the ending of Immaculate. I went into that movie completely blind as well, and I was just at the end of that movie.
You know what? I loved all the visuals they had in there and the slow panning shots. But you're right. They could have cut that out. It would not have decreased my enjoyment of the movie. And then that would have been cool, like the director's cut to see on the Blu-ray or whatever.
And that's how I think it should be. I think that you should have your theatrical version and your for the people that care that are going to get the physical media, give us a reward for still, you know, one of my biggest pet peeves is if I buy a Blu-ray and all I get is the movie, like that's one of my biggest pet peeves in the world. Like I want to see special features. I want to see behind the scenes. I want to see commentary. I can't wait for Abigail to come out on physical media so I can see some of the behind the scenes. I would love to see Alicia Weir up there on the, wires and shit. Like, I would love to see that. I would love to see.
That's why I buy Blu-rays, is for that kind of stuff.
Exactly. That's why we do this. And a movie like this, you know, there's going to be so much great behind the scenes stuff that they can put out there for us. So,
and the frustration when you see boutique labels like Arrow Video or Vinegar Syndrome or whoever, when they do these just immersive, immense special features, and it's like with the budget they have, when you know that Universal could do that with their budget, obviously, and not even blink at it.
What do we think about a potential sequel?
The way that I could see a sequel going for sure is more of like a redemption story of Joey going back to kill Abigail's father to turn her back. Because we know that once the vampire that bit you is destroyed, you're restored.
Yeah, so, you're right.
You know, like, could she, you know, try to save Abigail from that life? Because the seeds have been planted that Abigail's dad, who we all, I think, unanimously agree is Dracula.
Yeah.
Doesn't give a shit about her. Thought he wanted a kid. Ended up he didn't want a kid. So now she's just trying to impress him. Maybe that's how Joey goes back in to try to, you know, as like a revenge type thing to get her out of there, kill Dracula, turn her back into a normal girl. You know, and the twists and turns that come along with that. I mean, I think a sequel could write itself.
I definitely don't want them to be like another kidnap girl type movie.
Right.
You'd have to have a good story.
I feel like they've set up some great characters in a great universe that they can really bounce off of.
Ken, you brought up a good point. I was thinking that, Abigail, you kind of don't know. Yes, she's enjoying her work, but is she only doing this work because, you know, like she wants approval from her dad? And there's so many cases in history, obviously, of people doing what they do because they want approval from their parents. So that's actually that'd be a really kind of fun, kind of cool sequel.
Here we go.
There's a lot of daddy issues in this movie.
Yeah, I was going to say Abigail 2, daddy issues.
Yeah.
Yep. But see, and I think that
parent issues.
Because you finally get, like I said, you had the seeds planted throughout the whole movie that her dad doesn't love her, doesn't want her. And then you finally have her standing up to her dad. You know, no. She helped me when you weren't here for me, you know? So you have that moment of, you know, there are people out there that would care about me. I would be fine if this was a standalone film. Not everything needs to get a sequel.
I'm not saying it needs a sequel, but I see potential with what they've done.
I would be open to a sequel.
Performing in the box office, I don't think it'll happen. Which is such a fucking bummer.
Oh man, I will say the theater I saw it in was pretty full actually. Which is in Vegas, we have where I'm at, we have four movie theaters in like a 5 mile radius, and the one I was at was actually really full, which was nice.
It did okay, and maybe word of mouth will help give it some legs.
And that's what I'm hoping for because as of right now, Abigail is tracking to earn 12 to 15 million on its domestic opening box office weekend. The film had a $28 million budget. So if it makes 15, the film had a $28 million budget. Usually your marketing budget's the same. So let's say another $28 million, which is going to put us at $46 million. And then obviously theaters take half of that when you're getting it. So this film's going to have to make $100 million just to make money. That's just to break even.
Damn.
So, you know, like, and that to me is just like, it's – we get a good movie like this that deserves to be, and I don't want to call this an original horror movie. I know people are calling it an original horror movie, but this has been done before. There's a foreign film that's almost beat for beat. but it's still a very unique. It's not a sequel. It's not a requel. It's something, you know, fresh. I'll say fresh, not original, but fresh. And all the people that are all anti-remake, anti-reboot are like, no, I'm not going to see it. And unfortunately, you know, you have people that are anti-Universal because of the unfortunate things that are going on politically overseas. They're like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to go see this because of where they stand politically. And it's like, dude, come on. It's a fucking movie.
Some people are just anti-fun as well, yeah. I noticed.
Yeah.
I had a thought and I just lost it.
And yeah, not to get into politics or anything like that, but when you're trying to boycott something like this based on Universal, there's a lot of stuff that you need to boycott in your life if this is going to be the soapbox you stand on.
Yeah. All right. Let's do our episode, our movie rating. We do 0 to 5, 5 being the best, 0 being the worst. You can do half points. Ken, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, 4.5. I'm very, very strong with that pick. There's the negatives I have are extremely nitpicky. This is one of the first movies I've seen in a long time to where I had to reach for negatives.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one perfect movie ever made, and there's nothing that's ever going to come close to Pee-wee's Big Adventure. But no, this was a lot of fun, and like I said, the little negatives that were there, cut off 10 minutes, teeth looked ridiculous at a couple points. I can forgive those. So 4.5 for me.
All right, Jody.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on this one. If a movie can give me this good of a time in the theater, then yeah, no, it deserves that. And these performances especially really elevate it. So yeah, I'm going 4.5 as well.
Okay.
Mondo.
I was honestly jumping back and forth between 4.5 and 5, but then I had to go up with my own system and say, if I have to question whether it's 5, it's not 5. And so I'm also 4.5. And that is like, I was reading just Joe Hill, Stephen King's son, who I think is a great author. Did you see the tweet he put out that kind of pissed some people off?
No.
He said, if you're going to review a book on Goodreads and you loved it, give it 5 stars. If you didn't love it, just don't rate it. And people just like immediately went off on him. And he goes, the problem is that most people, if you give something 3 stars, it means it was good. It was solid.
Yeah.
Right. It wasn't great, but it was solid. But people will write it off as being garbage. But this is, again, a case of your results may vary, right? Like, I loved this movie. I think most people are going to love this movie. If you give it a 5, you're not wrong. Like, I'm with you on that. That's awesome. I'm glad you love this movie that much, because Jason's about to give it a 5, I feel like, and I hope he is. but it's a 4.5 is, like, holy shit, it's a great movie. Like, fucking go out
for
your way.
For me, a 3. Like, if I give something, I'm heavily critical. Yeah.
No, I like that. I like that you were.
We're not.
It's funny because I'm always the low guy. Like, I'm all. And if I give something a 3, that means I really, really enjoyed it.
That's
so cool. Like, yeah, like some of the movies I've seen this year, just to like kind of give you like not to go too deep into it, because I know that, I gave Night Swim a 2. I gave Lovely Dark and Deep a 2.5. I gave Cheryl a 2.5, Frozen Empire 2.5, You'll Never Find Me 2.5, Stop Motion 3, The First Omen a 2, Baghead a 3, Immaculate a 3.5, Abigail 4.5. You know, I tend to be between, you know, 2 and 3 is usually where my thing is. So for something to go all the way up to a 4.5, it impressed me a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Mondo, you stole my thunder. I'm going 5.
I knew. I used to guess your reigns on a piece of paper. This time I just threw it out there because I was like, as much as Jason talked about this beforehand, and he said it's going to be his favorite movie of the year, it's got to be a 5 for him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, I'm not saying it's a lock, but it takes something pretty damn good to unseat this. And I just had so much fun. It was so. Sometimes movies try to be heavy on the themes or just heavy on the gore. They forget to bring the fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What's the fun?
Well, I've been thinking, like, while I was sitting there, I'm like, what am I going to like this year more than this? Like, what even is in the possibilities? The only one that I've got sitting out there that I feel like could potentially topple it is Maxine. And no, outside Maxine, though, I don't have anything upcoming. I could still be surprised.
You got Nosferatu.
Sure.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not going to see that one. That one's not going to be as fun to me as Abigail, by far.
The original
Trap looks really, really good.
Trap looks good. Yeah. There's several movies that look good out there. I just don't see, other than Maxine, anything sitting out there right now that I'm thinking that could be my number one.
I'm actually looking forward to Nosferatu remake because the original, I understand its place in horror history and I respect it. I've paid $44 in 1999 money, I think, for the Kino box set or whatever to watch it. But it's boring as fuck. I'm just going to be honest with you. It has some really cool imagery. But I do like the idea of them. If they try to remake it with that same kind of gothic flair, it could be really cool.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, there's still stuff out there. There's plenty of stuff we don't even know about yet, you know, more on the indie
side. Oh, yeah. No, there could definitely be something that surprised me. Just as far as things that I've heard about that I'm looking forward to, Maxine's the only one that I feel like is even, like, potential in the ballpark right now.
My favorite movie last year was, like, Godzilla Minus One, and I'm kind of torn between those two.
Jody, have you seen Late Night with the Devil yet?
Oh, yeah. No, I watched it a couple nights ago. Yeah, no, it's fantastic, and it's... I have Abigail, Late Night with the Devil, and Immaculate all kind of nudging each other back and forth, trying to figure out which one I like better. I love them all. Like, those are all three great movies that I watched, like, in the last week and a half.
Unsurprisingly, those are my top three bouncing back.
Yeah.
I may be the only person on the planet, but I'm really excited for the James McAvoy American remake of Speak No Evil.
It looks good.
Did you watch the original?
The other one? Fucking rocked me to my. I know this is going to be Blumhouse. It's going to be sanitized compared to what the other one was, but that one fucking rocked me. Like, I thought about that movie for like weeks after. I'll never watch that movie again. Great movie, but I don't ever want to feel that way again. The way I felt watching that movie.
It's interesting because if you talk to people who don't have children, I don't think it hit them as hard.
Right.
And which is not. Nothing wrong with that. It's totally fine. Like, different movies affect people different ways. But to also being a, you know, obviously we're all fathers here. That movie like really fucked me up. But I was also, that movie also really pissed me off.
I was so furious. Dude, okay, I was fucking mad watching that movie. Like, I'm looking at Ashley and I'm like, are you, the minute that dude would have tried to give my wife meat, I'd have been like, look, we're done. We're out.
Yeah.
Like, I got the fuck out of there. Totally fucking insulted my wife. We're leaving. Goodbye. You know, like, but to see James McAvoy play that character, I'm stoked on it, man. Like, I'm really stoked.
James McAvoy's good. He's good.
I can say
I don't mean play a bad guy like that.
There's a good chance I'm not going to watch the sequel. I'm not going to watch the American remake only because of how that foreign film hit me. I don't want to feel that way again.
Well, I think that this is going to be just from watching the trailer, I could tell you this is going to have a completely different. They're fighting back in the trailer. You know what I mean? Like, you can visually see them fighting back. So I think this is, again, it's Blumhouse. They're going to sanitize it. They're not going to give us exactly what we got with the other one. But I just got to check it out to see McAvoy's performance, man. Everything he does to me is just like gold standard. He's one of my favorites. So even in the trailer, when you see him throw the thing and he does that weird smile, I'm like, dude, this guy's going to kill this role.
If that was Jody's family, all that would happen is one of his daughters would have just fucking jump kicked that guy in the face. Just left. I would have choked the guy unconscious, but but the jump kick sounds a lot better.
For the sake of time, Mondo, let's move on. Mondo, give us your song of the day.
The second time, let's move on. I love Jason and his So I picked a band from Greece. And their debut album in 1993 was called Crossing the Fiery Path. But before that, their first second demo tape was called Vampiric Rituals. And them, along with Riding Christ, kind of started the whole Gretchen or Greek black metal scene. It's a band called Necromantia. Very rooted in that whole occultism and vampirism and stuff like that. And the song I picked, I think it's a cool song title. Is called Lord of the Abyss, which you can find on Spotify, find it on Apple Music, find it on wherever you find your lovely music, or just go buy a physical copy. That's pretty awesome, too. But I do want to also pick a second song. Only because this may or may not be relevant as of Monday, because I haven't watched the match yet. But the main event
did you say AEW Lord Dynasty, of the Abyss?
Lord.
Lord.
Lord of the Abyss.
Came out. I'm trying to get it pulled up right now so I can listen to it when we're done.
Oh, dude, if you like early metal, it's second wave black metal from 93. But Greece was doing stuff that nobody else in the world was doing, kind of bringing in. I shouldn't say nobody else in the world is doing, but there's a definitely more melodic form of black metal than a lot of than like what Norway is doing versus very harsh, except for the outlier bands. So it's kind of interesting to kind of see where that came from. Like, even if you listen to early Rotting Christ, it sounds nothing like modern Rotting Christ does,
right?
Which is fine. It's just cool. no one fucking cares about this except for me.
Like, I like Joey lining up at Rotting Christ.
Rotting Christ, yeah, dude, they're a great fucking band. That new record, they have two songs out and they're good, so I'm excited. We'll see. So, song of the week is Necromantia from Greece. Crossing the Fiery Path is the album. The song will go with Lord of the Abyss. I had another point too, but it's fine. I forgot it. Oh, no, I had a second song. Sorry, yeah. Second song. We're doing two songs this week. It's a special week because if you're an AEW fan, have not watched a pay-per-view yet, pause it right now. But what I'm hoping is in the main event of AEW Dynasty, that Swerve Strickland is going to defeat Samoa Joe and win the AEW World Championship, be the first ever black AEW World Championship. So my second song is by Swerve the Realist. That's SW3RVE on Spotify or Apple Music with his theme song, Big Pressure, which I'll stand that I'm going to steal that fucking guitar riff from that. I'm going to steal the guitar riff from that song for sure and use it in my own song.
Nice. All right, Jody, you got some horror news.
All right, so let's start with releases. Right after we recorded last time, we recorded on a Monday, and the very next day, Immaculate released on VOD real quick. Like, I was not expecting it this soon. But if you haven't seen it, it is available now. Watch it at home. It's good stuff.
Throwback to 70s, 80s Nunsploitation.
Oh, yeah,
and 100%. If you want to know about Nunsploitation, there's a little podcast called
No Film Left Behind. That's right. Our very first episode was about Nunsploitation.
And a very good Nunsploitation episode. And it's totally, it filled this movie, filled that hole for me.
Yeah. All right. We got some other things coming out. We have. Let's see here. Well, Abigail obviously just came out. So if you haven't seen that, go see Abigail. But also, if you weren't able to get Late Night with the Devil in your hometown because it got a limited release, it is available on Shudder as of Friday the 19th. So, yes, check that out. Late Night with the Devil is excellent.
And then you can go listen to me and Mondo do a review.
That's right.
My wife watched it last night. It's one of the movies I love so much and I hyped her up on. I was like, you know, you're always watching a movie of someone that you hyped up and you're looking at them like, are you enjoying this as much as I hope you are? She absolutely loved it too.
Nice.
I think that watching it at home might be the better way to watch it.
I think you're right. I think, Late Night with the Devil is made to be watched on your TV.
We threw it on at 11 o'clock at night and we don't stay up that late because we're old. Mm-hmm. And I'm old. I'm going to call her old. I'm old. Let me edit that part out. but we watch like 11 o'clock at night. We just pop some edibles. We're feeling good. And she loved it. And it was like the perfect format to watch that movie in.
Yeah, it's so ironic that like the first Shudder movie I saw in the theater is the one that everyone's like, he's probably been at home.
My wife's one of those people that's kind of will always check her cell phone during movies, unless we're in the theater, and she was just glued to the TV for the whole time. That's always I know she's enjoying it when she's not doing anything outside of watching a film.
Got a couple more releases coming up. We have a double dose of Shyamalan because M. Night Shyamalan's daughter, Ishana Night Shyamalan, is releasing The Watchers before too long, and M. Night Shyamalan himself is releasing a movie this year, Trap, that comes out on August 9th. We got trailers for both of those sitting out there. I think they both look good, personally. Excited to check them both out. I'm a Shyamalan apologist, especially the last few years. I feel like he had a moment that things kind of went south, but he's picked it back up. I like current Shyamalan.
Oh, hold on. Unless, Split was wonderful. Did you watch Glass?
Glass made me mad, but I thought Old was okay, but it was still fun. I had fun with Old. Like, Old was a lot of fun. I thought the explanation for what happened was
not great, but I love.
Had a director I've been so hot and cold on. Like some stuff I love, other stuff I'm like rage at.
Again, Jody, I think you and I are the old apologists because I actually really liked old as well.
Yeah, no, I like old. Glass made me mad, and I won't get into why, but like I was furious at the end of Glass. So
I loved Glass until the last 15 minutes.
That's exactly where I'm at. Yep.
And I loved at the end of Split, I literally jumped up in the theater. I was like, no way.
Same here.
Oh my God. Yeah. And people around me, like, no one knew what was going on. I was like, go watch Unbreakable.
But yeah, the last 15 minutes, we can talk off air about why Glass did not work for me, but boy, it made me mad.
That reminds me, I saw Godzilla 2014, and I saw it opening night, and when he finally is going to do the radioactive breath and his thing, I stood up and went, yes, and no one else said anything. And I sat back down all slowly in my chair, like...
Having to watch movies with normal people. Got some casting news. Wednesday season 2, Wednesday being the Addams Family, Jenna Ortega. Mm-hmm. Steve Buscemi's going to be in the cast in season 2. So
why not?
You know, he makes everything better. And I don't have a ton this week, but I do have one other that I'm personally excited about because I'm halfway through season 1, but Prime Video has officially ordered a season 2 for Fallout. And if you have played the games, this show is so good. Halfway through season 1. Can't wait to jump into more of it.
I'm only 2 episodes in. I need my wife to come back in town to watch it. And I'm in. I'm sold. I fucking love it.
They nailed the world. That's all I needed. They just need to get the tone right. And they have. I like the characters. It's good stuff. And we are officially getting a season 2. So.
Yeah, I love how Amazon put it on Twitter or something like that, going like, no need to worry, Fallout season 2 is coming.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, of course.
That's it. That's all I got this week.
Oh, one more thing. What's back on Peacock is Chucky.
Yes, Chucky is happening right now.
Chucky are out, so we could all use more Jennifer Tilly in our lives.
All right, let's take a dip into the Patreon pit. Our question of the week was, what kind of vampire child would you least want to babysit? I gave some options and let people kind of fill in their own. Obviously, I went with ballerina, soccer player, actor, jiu-jitsu, podcaster, and then again, other. We had some votes for jiu-jitsu and podcaster.
Is that just people don't want to hang around podcasters?
Yeah.
Neither of them can shut the fuck up about what they like to do.
So right. Obviously, there's that trope, like in the new Ghostbusters, of like that one character is literally named Podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
My my buddy Shep posted something on Instagram that goes like, if you're over 30 and you enjoy horror movies, pro wrestling, or something else, don't start a podcast. Start spotting with, fuck you, I waited till I was 40.
Right. Someone else said, like, one of those Instagram/TikTok kids.
Annoying. Could you imagine them trying to do, like, shitty fucking TikTok pranks in public? Yeah. Bro, this is Vampire TV. We're gonna drink this dude's blood. Like, this can be the worst thing ever.
Hey, bro,
vampire influencers.
Vampire influencers.
I drain your friend, bro. That's how kids talk nowadays, right? I don't fucking know.
Oh, yeah, we're talking like the kids from when we were kids.
Yeah.
That's how we talk now. Fucking mocking these poor young
people. Doing parodies of ourselves right now.
100%.
You young people with your positive mental health.
Taking care of your problems.
Yeah. Talking about things and working them out. We come the generation, we're men. We just buried that shit inside. Let it eat us alive.
All right. And then to wrap things up, Ken, we have our traditional question of father advice, parenting advice, dad advice. What advice, especially as a horror dad of 3 wonderful children, would you like to leave our audience?
I mean, let your kids be themselves. I would never tell someone how to parent. That's not my gig. Every child is different. And like I said, my oldest doesn't want anything to do with horror. My middle child is like, eh. My youngest loves it. but the big thing is just be there. You know, let's go with let's use this movie and this episode together as the advice. Just be there. Just showing up. It means the world. You know, like I never miss a wrestling match. I never miss a dance recital. I never, no matter what's happening with Sledgehammer Horror, the kids are always first, and that's the way that it should be. So just be there. Tell your kids you love them every day. I still kiss my son on the cheek before he leaves. You know, tell, keep me updated on where you're going. Let me know you're safe. You know, that's the best advice I can give. Love them. Let them know that you do.
That's awesome. That's great.
Yeah, my daughter's 21, and I'm still like I kind of mentioned on the podcast that may never see the light of the day. one of the you never stop worrying as a parent because you love your kids that much, and all you really want for your kids is them to be happy. And if they're happy, then you did okay.
And you know, it's Ashley and I are really horror mom and dad to a lot of people in the community, and I'm not going to get too deep into it, but Haunted Hippie, she's on vacation overseas right now, and you know, I totally texted her, you know, hey, I'm so glad you guys are having fun, be safe, keep me updated, letting me know you're okay once in a while. Yeah, you know, like it's just you just care about people, man. Like that's what it boils down to. Just fucking, even whether they're your kids or not, you know, let people know you love them. You never know when you won't be able to. So that's the best advice I can give. What do you think? You like scary movies? Okay. Right, well, come on over here because you're in your pajamas. But yeah, the best fatherly advice I can give, you know, be there, listen.
Yeah.
Especially in the world that we live in now, the information is so quick to get into their heads, and letting them decide who they want to be rather than you telling them who to be, that's the best thing you can do. Just be there, support them, love them. You know.
Can't get much better than that.
That's perfect. Yeah.
All right. Well, that wraps up another episode. Ken, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find you and more about Sledgehammer Horror?
You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Sledgehammer Horror, YouTube at Sledgehammer Horror, and then Twitter, because I'll never call it X, at Sledgehammer Horror, H-O-R. And you hopefully in the near future will be seeing all three of these amazing guys on My First Horror Movie, so you can learn how horror started for them. So very, very excited to bring them on to work on that with them as well. So thank you guys from the bottom of my heart for having me on. This has been amazing.
That's been great.
Movies and parenthood and stuff with you guys. This is awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you being on.
All right. Well, next week we'll be back to our Creepshow reviews. We appreciate everyone for listening. We would really appreciate it if you give us a rating and review on iTunes, a rating on Spotify. Check out our YouTube channel for videos of these podcasts. And check us out on TikTok at Dads from the Crypt Talk. With that, we thank you for listening to Dads from the Crypt.
Follow Dads from the Crypt on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or I will follow you to the grave. No, seriously, you really should watch, but be careful what you ask for. You may get it. Ha 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 ha.